Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Netta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm great. This is our last episode that we're recording before the Olympics.
Holy shit.
So I'm very excited.
Holy shit. It's happening. I continue to be surprised. I didn't expect to be this emotional about this. It's happening. We're doing it. It's the Olympics.
It truly is. And my favorite part about the Olympics and why I watch is because I want to hear the athletes' stories.
Yes.
And oftentimes the coverage of the Olympics will lean into these narratives and these stories. And what we wanted to talk about today was just sort of our opinions and perspectives and the ways in which those narratives get twisted for television or what you don't hear, slash also just like, these are the people that you want to watch for. These are the people that we love. These are the people who are likely to win or do very well. And these are the people who aren't, but are still amazing. Look out for them, you know?
Yeah. Again, like we said before, no one's paying us. Those are just our personal opinions as humans who have been along for this ride for many, many, many years. But don't, if you disagree, that's fine. But please don't be mean about it and have fun.
Yeah, we approach all of our opinions from a perspective of like, this is what we think. We would never in a million years be like, if you disagree, then you're a piece of shit. Like, that's not how we view it. We're not attacking you. We're just sharing our opinions. I have plenty of really amazing good friends who follow figure skating who have completely different skating opinions than me, but we don't fight about it because it's skating.
Because we're allegedly adults.
There you go.
Okay, let's get into it.
Sure. So I want to give a quick content warning. So very unfortunately, it's not really possible to talk about top figure skaters without touching a little bit on topics such as abusive coaching methods, sexual harassment, and disordered eating and body image issues. We're not going to talk about it a ton or in very gory detail, but if you know that you can't handle any amount of this topic in your life, then I would say honestly, you don't have to listen to this episode. You can totally just watch the Olympics and enjoy it for what it is. Absolutely no judgment. Everybody just has to do what's right for them. We just can't not talk about it because it's unfortunately a huge part of this and many other sports.
Yeah, so proceed with caution, take care of yourself, and we're still gonna make this fun. It's just a part of our sport. And this is where we're at.
Yeah, it's not like the theme of the episode or I don't want anybody to be like, oh God, it's going to be like a depressing 2020 expose. It's really not. But I just don't want anybody to be caught off guard if that's really triggering for you.
Yeah. Take care of yourselves. Let's go.
All right, Netta. What kinds of people are Olympic figure skaters?
Well, first of all, very talented, very good, very highly trained people. But aside from that, anyone can, in theory, be a figure skater. The people who make it this far are people who've had a lot of support from either their federation or sponsors or are just luckier. Because unfortunately, figure skating is very, 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 very expensive. Like we talked about in part one, the equipment is expensive, ice time is expensive, coaching is expensive, all of it costs a lot of money. So basically anyone who is historically a part of a lower socioeconomical group is less likely to make it this far, which sucks and is a terrible reality of the sport. A lot of figure skaters you see actually have very public fundraising for their careers and a lot of sponsors and all kinds of things to make it possible for them.
Yep. So in addition to the money factor and all of the other categories that tends to correlate with, race and race is the big one that comes to mind, but country.
For sure.
We also we live in a society, as you may have noticed. So beauty standards are a thing that exist and are oppressive and really stupid and subjective, but they exist in a aesthetic sport. We're breaking free of them, but it's slow. And I think the progress is overall kind of slower in skating than it is in the real world. So basically you have to have a specific type of body. And that doesn't mean that you can't skate if you are fat or disabled or have any other kind of body difference. Honestly, look on TikTok and you'll see literally everyone can do freaking amazing stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a willowy girly ballerina to skate. It's you could anybody can skate. It sounds corny, but it's true. It's just a matter of we live in a society and those funding sources and those opportunities are often going to people who look a certain way. And oftentimes that is kind of a racist thing too.
Oh, majorly. For sure. Oh, yeah, for sure. So bear all of that in mind as you head into like the personal stories and all of that, which is not to say we're not saying like, oh, figure skaters are all a bunch of like hyper privileged, you know, rich kids. All of them have their stories and all of them have worked very hard to be where they are. But it is a part of it that you have to understand is the Olympic figure skaters that you're seeing are not a representation of just like people who can skate, because I cannot stress this enough. Anyone could be skating.
I literally have deformed ankle muscles. Like my Achilles tendons are screwed up and I can still skate a little bit. So you can do it too.
Anyone can skate.
So Netta, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Are all skaters gay?
Yes. No.
End of podcast.
Yes. End of podcast. Well, see, the thing is, this is one of the topics that we've tackled many times and will continue to tackle. Realistically, no. And it's one of those weird things where for an outsider, it's especially in men's figure skating, unfortunately, there is like the stereotype that it's, you know, a gay quote unquote sport or something. And that's usually comes from people who mean it as an insult. Homophobia is a huge, huge, huge problem in figure skating, actually. And I think the outsiders who assume that it's a quote-unquote gay sport would be surprised to the extent to which being openly queer could jeopardize skaters' scores or the representation they're getting or the funding they're getting, all of that. This year is better, different. I read just today an article about how overall, I think there is like a record number of queer athletes going to the Olympics, openly out queer athletes across all sports going to the Olympics, which is not to say that there haven't been queer athletes in all sports and in figure skating in particular before, but it's just, I mean, we live in a society and part of that society is that it's deeply, deeply homophobic and dangerous for a lot of queer people to be publicly out. So it comes with repercussions, I think, less now, but it still does. For a skater to be publicly out.
Honestly, like, I don't think it would be a stretch to say that people come out in figure skating with about the same frequency as they do in, like, hockey or football, maybe slightly more often now, but like it's that uncommon and that controversial, and like that just like blows people's minds because they're like, but it's a gay sport, and it's like internally they actually like really resent that, like they being the old school powers that be, and so they then fight against that. And if they see somebody that's representing themselves in a way that is too flamboyant or too off the beaten path for their taste, that like that comes out in their scores.
It very much gets reflected in their scores. It gets reflected in commentary. There's a lot of like backhanded like, well, he is just letting his freak flag fly. And it's honestly depressing and upsetting in many ways. But I do think that there is a lot of strides that are happening. There are several out queer Olympians in figure skating, we're heading to the Olympics this year, which is amazing and is already a huge change. But there is, as in the world at large, just a lot of work to be done still.
Yep. So it's getting better. But in general, if a country has like very homophobic laws and policies, you can probably bet that like whoever's commentating skating in that country is also probably being like, this guy's not a real man, you know.
His name is Alexei Yagudin. You can say it and he's a garbage man.
Okay, fuck Alexei Yagudin.
Like from the bottom of my heart, like fuck a lot of that federation and their whole situation. But Alexei Yagudin is a former Olympian and a former competitive figure skater. And all you need to know about him is that he's a garbage piece of shit from hell.
Correct. So pivoting a little bit.
No.
No, never.
This is the roast of Alexei Yagudin now. I don't care.
There we go. We wanted to talk a tiny bit about age in skating because this is actually kind of true of a lot of Olympic sports, a lot of sports in general, but like particularly these Olympic type sports where the skaters seem to be getting younger and younger and younger.
Yes.
And so we just wanted to talk a little about like the age trajectory of a typical career. So like Olympic figure skaters usually start skating around like age 3 to 5. Some skate, like I think Johnny Weir started when he was like 12 or
he
something.
He did, but and he landed like an axel outlier. Within like, he landed his single axel within like 2 weeks, but he's insane.
He's Axel's Georg. He's the outlier. Should not be counted. No, he should. But basically, pretty much everybody starts when they're like toddlers, kindergartners, whatever. So they've been skating for a long time. Skating's really physically brutal and demanding, and it breaks your body down. Injuries are really common. If you're doing the level of technical elements that you will see from these Olympians that are required at this level, a body can't take that forever. And so these people, God willing that their bodies stay pretty functional, will probably be able to skate until the day they die. But they are gonna have to stop doing like quads eventually, because that's just the way it is. And that usually happens for women around like, well, we'll talk about it. Like, in general, the career of a female skater is like roughly age 14 to 22. And there are definitely outliers on the upper end. The lower end, it's like not allowed. Men tend to enter seniors, which is like just age categories in skating. There's also juniors, which you can totally follow and is great. It's just younger skaters. But men tend to sort of, boys tend to graduate to seniors a little bit later, and they'll be active from age like 17 to 26. But like, you'll see guys in their early 30s occasionally. Generally, men get to stay active longer than women because the sport is not kind to women and the way their bodies change in puberty versus men. And like, obviously that's very gender essentialist, but like,
for but the it's sake true. Of,
it's that's the way the sport is divided, you know? Yeah. So we just wanted to sort of acknowledge that. That's like the kind of age groups you're going to be seeing. If you're like, why does the sport seem to be skewing younger and younger? This did not seem to be the case like 20 years ago. It's not just you. And it is happening in a lot of sports. Like, there were like 13-year-olds in Tokyo skateboarding.
At the Olympics, not just in the city of Tokyo.
Yeah. There's this general idea, I think, not even just in sports, but in sort of all anything that you can achieve, any skill, that like if a child does it, it's so unbelievably impressive because they're like a prodigy and they did it. They did something so quickly that requires so many years of honing that skill in general. And like, our general opinion on this podcast is like,
no.
Yeah, this is like, this kid can do things that most people can't do, but you can't condense years of anything into like a couple years. And so something's suffering. The technique is suffering, or the child's quality of life is suffering. The career is going to be shorter. Like, it's never a one-to-one thing. And so we'll get much more into that as we talk about Team Russia, to be honest. But it's particularly an issue in women's figure skating.
Yeah.
If we want to get really like nitty-gritty about it, there are two camps of female skaters. There are two types of female skaters who can do quads, essentially, or triple axels. And it's skaters who have had very long careers, built up a ton of muscle and technique, and are achieving these things because they've put the time in and have the proper technique and they've put the hours in. And then there's skaters who are straight up not pubescent. Like, they are straight up have child bodies and they weigh less, and it is easier to fly through the air if you weigh less. They have like very little muscle tone, and it's just a matter of like, the second they hit puberty or gain an ounce, it's like they can't do it anymore and they retire. And that fosters a system where kids are just getting replaced and not being sort of fostered throughout their career to grow. And so, yeah, I think if to put it in really plain terms, not to say anything derogatory about anybody's body, because it is super not what we're here for. Some of the people competing are going to look like women and some are going to look like children, and they are competing in the same competition on the same scoring system.
Yep, that's basically it. There is also, and we're going to get into it a little bit with particular teams, but there is, in the schools of thought that support, you know, amazing little 14-year-olds doing impossible things, that's everything we're acknowledging now is kind of celebrated and is a part of it. Their coaches have infamously talked about how every ounce of weight is an ounce of laziness added to the skater and bullshit like that. So it's very much that old school, like, if you imagine, like, the evil ballet teacher in, like, a very, very, very reductive movie about dancers, there's people who actually approach aesthetic sports like that still to this day. And it's fucked up. And people are trying to talk about it, but it's so ingrained in a lot of figure skating culture, and there's like generations of people who are in charge who are okay with this shit, which is why we're seeing this. And as of like the past couple of years, there have been a lot of actual like competitive skaters or former competitors who are very outspoken about like thinking that raising the age minimum for seniors or something will really, really, really help foster longer careers and healthier relationships with the sport and the way things are achieved for a lot of people. But that would hurt a lot of interests, and that's why it hasn't happened.
Right, because if you can only do a quad for 1 year when you're 14, your federation wants you in seniors winning gold that year.
Yeah.
They don't want you waiting until you're 15 and all of a sudden you have hips and your center of gravity is different. Also, and this is really dark, but like kids are easier to manipulate. And if you get them away from their parents, you can make them practice for way too long and eat way too little and it'll achieve results. And then you end up with bodies that, yeah, sure, maybe they're more aerodynamic, but they're also more fragile and they're going to break a lot easier. So it's just really, it's rough. And on this podcast, we're really against it. But unfortunately, that is who is going to win gold, silver, and bronze in women's is those types of skaters. It's just true.
It's just the case.
So we just wanted to like let you know because that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Also, you say, you know, part of the whole thing is it's way easier to like get a child away from its support system. It also goes to we should mention that it's not the case with everyone and we don't know anyone's home life or anything, but there is a lot of like dance mom behavior from a lot of the parents of those children who are being put through this as well. Because when a lot of powerful people tell you that your child is this like once in a lifetime prodigy and the only way to achieve whatever, there's people who will buy into that. And conversely, just real quick, it's insane that this continues to be a narrative that's pushed, but there tend to be like 5 or 6 once in a lifetime prodigies every year for some reason. It's always like, well, no one's done it like them and no one ever will. And then the child hits puberty and then there is a new child.
Exactly. So it's really dark. And the best that we can do is actually like not dignify it with praise.
Because
as fans and like for us as people who have a podcast, we generally don't talk about skaters that we know for a fact are under these conditions that are really unhealthy, even if they win, because there's nothing to say.
Yeah, we've talked about it at length at some point, and you can find, I very infamously went on a huge rant about it on our Twitter, which you can find if you want to engage more with our non-engagement, but it's a very active and conscious choice to boycott. And it might be a small thing, but I personally believe that the less people praise and acknowledge those quote-unquote achievements, the less people will be inclined to put the health and safety of children at stake for this bullshit.
Yeah, ooh, it's very like 10-year-old opera singer on America's Got Talent. It's like, sure, it's great, but every voice teacher in the world will tell you that this kid is going to have no vocal cords left in a couple of years.
Yeah,
so it's just that.
Yeah, there's a reason skills take time. Anyway, let's, with all of that in mind, let's talk about some more things.
God. Sure. So a lot of times what we look for in sports is like rivalries. Do skaters hate each other? Do they shit talk each other? And a lot of times for the sake of like TV ratings and making it narratively interesting, which is like a big part of the Olympics and how it's broadcast, you will hear like Nathan Chen and Yuzuru Hanyu head to head, blah, blah, blah. And it's this, it's tempting to be like, do they hate each other? And the truth is right now in skating, I cannot think of a single pair of people who publicly hate each other.
Like an outward rivalry. Yeah. There have been some in the past. Like in past Olympic cycles, there have been many people who like are very openly enemies. And currently, and honestly, because we have so much social media and stuff as well, you will see, and less now with like the pandemic and everything, but like usually when an event happens, you see like everyone literally hanging out and being friends, which is not to say that it's like, oh, like kumbaya, whatever, like they're not besties, but everyone's pretty cordial, at least from what we've seen. Maybe they all do hate each other.
I mean, they all seem to really enjoy each other's company on like their YouTube vlogs. And there are so many infamous pairs of besties in this sport that I could talk about. And I just can't name a single rivalry. And even Yuzu and Nathan, they love each other because if you're if you're basically unbeatable and there's one other person who could maybe give you a run for your money, you're going to love that person because you're a competitor, you're an athlete, and that's like a reason to keep trying.
Yeah, it boggles my mind when people think the two of them hate each other, because if I were this good at anything, I would very much like to have one other person in the world know what it feels like.
Yeah. Well, so the reason that we say this is because one thing that you might see, especially if you spend any time on like the internet.
Please, Dawn, take care of yourself.
Yeah, just stay away from that place. It's yucky. But the fans get really, really, really worked up. So you'll see like Nathan fans and Yuzu fans really go at it or talk shit. People get really, really toxic and gross. And it's just not reflective of the way the skaters treat each other. And every skater we've ever talked to is honestly like, I don't go on the internet because it scares me.
Yeah. I mean, it's for a lot of people, ourselves maybe sometimes included, it's very, very, it's like being a fan of a band or something like that. It's very important that you like the correct people and that all of your friends share that opinion and everything else is gross and bad and whatever. And that's just not a healthy way to live your life. And I would encourage you, if you see a take on Twitter that's like, well, so-and-so is the worst because of this and this and this and that, and they're canceled, and why are they even there? To remember that someone wrote that in the heat of the moment, and 9 times out of 10, they're just mad, and it's fine. And also the blog button is free.
It's true. And as we have just spent all this time talking about actual problems in the sport, like, I want to be clear. It's not that you can't say anyone's bad. It's just that, like, I think that it's important to focus on the actual issues and not, like, try and say that somebody deserves to die because you don't like the way that they did a triple axel or something.
There is so much in our sport that would be easier to fix if people spend the time and energy getting mad about it compared to, like, well, I don't like his costume, so like go kill yourself if you like him. Like, it's, there is big problems, and then there's a collection of people on the internet who will justify their personal opinions by trying to make it about someone being a good person or a bad person, and you just shouldn't engage with that.
We don't know these people personally, you know what I mean? Like, we literally don't, and we've talked to some of them, but it doesn't mean that we like know their lives. So somebody random on Twitter doesn't. But anyway, the last thing we wanted to say before we get into talking about specific individual skaters is we wanted to talk about this question of like, why would you go to the Olympics if you know you can't win? And this is so much bigger than skating. This is true of any sport. So many people go to the Olympics and know that they do not have a shot at gold.
I find it hard to talk about this because I think it's such an obvious answer. People have different trajectories and different goals, and there is many ways you can, I mean, aside from like the politics and potential problematicness of the Olympics, on a very base level, for just like the athletes and the audiences, it's a huge honor and it's a huge achievement to even make it there. And there's so many reasons why a person would want to go. There is people who, for example, went to the past Olympics and they were in the top 15 and now they're like, I want to make top 10. People skate for their personal bests. People represent countries who've never been represented before. There's just so much for... Like, personally, I am Bulgarian, and we have not had a singles skater at the Olympics since 1998. And this year, we get to have a woman compete in the women's single freestyle, a solo skater. And that's extremely exciting. And there have been, like, featurettes about her on the news and just, like, people, like, following her training. And is she gonna win? No. Is she gonna be top 20? Maybe. We don't fucking know. But the fact that we're sending someone for the first time in literally, like, 20 years is already huge. So there is many reasons for many countries and many people and many athletes.
Yeah, I think a lot of commentary would have you believe that everybody thinks they're going to win gold and is competing to win gold. And if they don't skate as well as somebody else, that it's going to be a huge disaster for them. And truthfully, like, most people know that they're not going to win. Most people go and say, it is my goal to skate as best as I possibly can at the Olympics, and I will feel proud.
Yeah, most people compete, and we've heard this said by, like, several athletes. Most people don't compete with the scores and with each other, but with their personal best, with whatever they've done before. So it's a completely legit thing to be like, my past fucking short program best is 65 and I want to go to the Olympics and break 70. Like, that's fine. That's a good goal to have.
Yeah. And I guess this is not our scoring episode, but one thing we forgot to say is that in the score box, if you see SB, it means that there's season's best score. And if you see PB, it means there's personal best score, which means of all the seasons they've been skating, this is the highest score they ever got. Getting that at the Olympics,
I would retire. I would buy a house on the top of a mountain and never enter society again if I got a personal best at the Olympics.
That's valid.
Oh gosh, let's talk about people. We've made it this far. It's the Olympics. Who are we actually seeing?
Okay, so this is an interesting one. We're going to start with the women. And all of that stuff that we were kind of vaguely alluding to about the dark side of the sport and, you know, the little girls being pushed to do these things and breaking their bodies and stuff, it's pretty much mostly Russia. It's any other place where this is happening is typically coaches that are from the Russian school or like were in Russia or are trying really hard to
emulate,
model yeah. their, yeah, to emulate them, to compete with them. It's like Russia's the massive epicenter. And generally, as we said, we do like kind of boycott talking about these skaters. But like, if you don't know anything about this, all you're going to hear is like Johnny Weir, who is so far up Russia's ass, be like, they're the greatest thing that's ever happened ever. And so we wanted to give you like a more balanced view of things going in. So like, here's the context for Team Russia.
God, here's the context. Go for it.
Okay, here's the context. So there are skaters in Russia who do not skate with Sambo 70, the skating school, and they are very good.
Yes.
In terms of who's going to the Olympics, it is all three girls are from Sambo 70. It's a skating school in Russia that is led by Eteri Tutberidze, who is honestly kind of the antagonist as far
She's
as we're
villain.
Concerned. She's the villain. I don't know how else to say it. I don't know her personally, but like we will get into in just a second why I feel comfortable calling her a villain. You can recognize her because she's just like, she's like a very like classically beautiful woman with like long golden curls and like she's very glamorous and like ice witchy looking.
She wears Louis Vuitton head to toe.
Designer
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, just looks mean all the time. People do,
she
people
looks
do unspeakable things and then she just kind of nods. She has never smiled once in her life.
Yeah, which is sort of a thing because a lot of the skaters in interviews that skate with her have said, like, getting a smile from her, getting a hug from her, getting approval from her is, like, so withheld that it's used as a tactic to, like, motivate them to do crazy things. So it's all this, like, horrible rhetoric. But basically, she's the head, and then her, like, right-hand man slash, like, butler or whatever is that he's just kind of like this shit-eating looking like 30-year-old dude who follows her around, and his name is Daniil Gleichengaus. He does most of the choreography.
He does. He's it's credited as a choreographer. Whether or not he does choreography is questionable.
Correct. So he thinks he is God's gift. He is so cocky. He talks shit about these girls all the time, these like teenage girls that he coaches all the time. It's just weird. They paint it like he's like this fun big brother to them, and like it's just a very bizarre power dynamic. And his style of choreography is essentially less about artistry and more about packing the most amount of possible movements into the allotted time. And so it's like we're literally just mathematically juicing it so that we can get the most points out of it. And the result is you see these like kids kind of frantically flapping around the ice for 4 minutes, and it's not good to look at. There are elements that are designed to be held, like spirals and spread eagles. You'll see these kids pop their leg up over their head and then, oh, blink and you miss it. It's down.
Yep.
That's not what that's supposed to be. But if you don't do it for too long, you can fit a bunch more jumps in or whatever.
Yep. So that's basically it about them. And then there is the third person in their little party of villains is Sergei Dudikov, who honestly, I don't know why he's there.
I get the feeling that he actually does more coaching than either of them do. And that's kind of part of it.
He's just this old dude who is just,
he looks like a henchman, and I don't want to like make fun of anybody's looks or whatever, but he does kind of look like a classical like henchman to a villain.
He looks like if you go to like a casting call in like Hollywood for Russian mafia henchmen, he's gonna be there and he's gonna book it.
He just exudes it because of like what he does. If he was like the nicest guy on earth, we'd be like, he's such a cute little teddy bear, you know?
Well,
but anyway, so that's that. The thing about Sambo is, with a couple of exceptions, it's pretty much all teenage girls. They have basically every year a new winner, and they're teenagers, and then they retire as teenagers because they're done. And they get a huge, 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 huge scoring bonus. It's like colloquially known as the Atari bonus. We don't really know where it's coming from. Like we said in the last episode, it's not like there's some smoking gun or a money trail. It just exists, and like absolute best case benefit of the doubt scenario, it's this thing where the judges are just so enraptured by this particular aesthetic and this, which I don't buy for a second. But anyway, here are the hallmarks of their training, and there's much documentation on the internet of all these things. It's not like people are going in undercover and doing exposés. Everything we know that's horrible about their training comes from them bragging about it.
Yep.
Or their students talking about it, and 90% of the time the students are saying, but it's fine, I love them, they're great, and not even realizing how awful the shit
they're saying. Or the third version, or the third part of that is people who have retired, were under their coaching team, and then once they recover, just broken in all sorts of ways, they go on to do interviews and are like, yeah, here's all the fucked up shit they did.
Yeah, but basically, here's what we know. At the last Olympics, Evgenia Medvedeva and Alina Zagitova, who were at the time training under them and got gold and silver, were not allowed to drink water during the Olympics because Evgenia, who is one of those like third category people who went on to speak out against this, said that she's like, yeah, like we were so skinny and malnourished that we had no muscle mass. And so if you drink water, you retain water because that's what a body does when it's malnourished. And so we just weren't allowed to. So that's a thing. So many documented cases of like the coaches speaking very publicly about, oh, they can't eat or they can't gain weight, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, oh, surprise, I have to retire because I have an eating disorder. Yulia Lipnitskaya, the little girl in the red dress that we talked about last time, retired at like 17 with an eating disorder. And it's like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. Where did it come from?
Yeah, fucking surprising. Know.
What do you think?
Was it Daniil who was bragging about letting them have 2 shrimp for dinner?
Oh yeah, no, he was bragging about how good of a person Anna Sherbakova is because she only ate 2 shrimp for dinner and she doesn't have a quote-unquote problem with food the way some of the other
two
girls do.
Shrimp.
It's such a problem having an appetite. 2 shrimp, just 2.
I don't
even know what to say about that, but like it's kind of this 3-pronged hellscape where it's like nutrition and eating and body stuff is incredibly fucked up and bad. The emotional manipulation of like trying to win a Terry's affection and having her be this like cold, distant figure and really like weaponize her attention of who's her favorite girl today, who's her favorite girl tomorrow. She won't talk to you today or she won't talk to you if you don't land this quad. Like these are all things skaters have said and you can find this stuff in interviews. The third piece of it is that they are not allowed to take breaks or days off ever, including when they're hurt. There have been interviews where people have said, you have to skate with 2 broken toes. If you're hurt, you keep skating on it. This is why these careers are not lasting very long. It's not rocket science.
Yeah. The only thing I want to add is about Terry's like emotional coldness and manipulation. It's, you don't even need to like go out and like search for any of the interviews or anything. You can just watch. And you will, when you watch the Olympics, you can just watch as sometimes those girls, and it, we have to say, we don't have anything against the actual girls. They
seem really sweet and lovely and really cute.
Wish someone would like seriously help them in many, many ways. And I only criticize them through the lens of like, they are a product of a system that should not be existing. But sometimes you watch like one of them, like do one of those allegedly incredible programs, like everything works. All of the jumps are there. It's good. People are weeping and like showering them with plushies and they will skate off and she's at the boards, obviously greeting them because it's her photo op. And they will like collapse into her arms, like going in for the hug. And sometimes it's like this one arm, like little pat situation, and it's like, just fucking give the girl a hug for once. It's not gonna break you.
Yeah, I also wanted to touch upon the fact that many of them have had COVID already, and that's not a moral judgment because like, hello, like lots of people have had COVID. What's alarming is the way that they've sort of handled it and like very characteristically like not given them time to rest or like lied about what it was and then sent them out to skate and then they're like passing out. Like Anna Sherbakova had to be revived with smelling salts because she got pneumonia after she had COVID, and it's just like, it's not just Russia doing it, but I bring it up because Danil Gleichengaus, the infamous choreographer / butler, has just as of time of recording today tested positive and is still very much getting on a plane. And it's like
they're like proud of it. And also, why is he going? No one needs him to be there. It's whatever. One thing I do want
to... You might need to add a couple more kicks and arm flaps at the last minute.
One thing I do want to mention, I think it's changed since, but at some point, the girls themselves were in hot water about not being vaccinated. And people are like, here's another reason to hate them and like whatever. But when that was happening, and I think it might have changed since because I don't think unvaccinated people can compete at the Olympics. But when that was happening... It was literally because they're under the age of 18, and in Russia, there is no approved vaccine for them to have. So if you hear anything like that, just like don't pass it on as like moral judgment. They're children, and they're in a country where children in general are not being vaccinated as of right now for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, and like what a perfect way to encapsulate the fact that like they're not really doing anything wrong. They're just part of... They're part of a larger system that's failing them. But we wanted to sort of break our own rule and talk briefly individually about who they are, because they are going to win gold, silver, and bronze no matter what they do out there.
Yeah.
So you should know who they are and what their deal is.
Yes. So number one, we have Kamila Valieva. She is a precious little child. She is
15.
Yeah, she's like 15 years old. She is the current favorite. And that is subject to change because she might bring a water bottle to Beijing. But she is currently the favorite. She gets all of the bonuses. She gets bonus points for being there. She gets bonus points for being the flavor of the year. There is this thing of having the edge of being the prodigy of the year. And she is this year. And yeah, everyone's going to tell you that she's like this once in a lifetime skater, and then someone will replace her in a year or two. It's a matter of time.
Yep. It's very dark, but it's true. I will eat my hat if she doesn't win gold, honestly. I don't think it...
There's nothing she can do.
The thing about her is that she's actually very good. Like, none of the Atari girls are bad at skating. Like, they're all good. They're all landing difficult jumps. They're all skating at an elite level. And if you were to show me them in a vacuum, I would say, that's a nice skater. She's going to be really good in, like, 5 or 6 years. But it's just, like, the dissonance between what we're being told we're looking at, aka God's gift to skating, no one's ever done any of this before, versus what we're seeing, which is, like...
A girl who's learning,
and she's like got a lot of talent, but it would have to be nurtured in a specific way. So anyway, the second girl in this team, and like, I don't want to be demeaning when we say girl. The reason we're saying girl is because that's just sort of like, they're very young and they look like girls, and like, I don't know how else to say that. But Anna Shcherbakova, she was the last favorite girl. Like, she's been replaced by Kamila, but she was the golden child. And her main issue is that she's just slightly less consistent than Kamila with her like crazy hard jumps. And so if you're not perfect every time, you're not the favorite anymore. The bar is low for the artistry, to be honest, and a lot of that is because of the choreography. It's also just like where the emphasis is placed or not placed. A lot of the thing with these skaters from this particular Russian school is that they are very, very skinny and in tutus. And if you put a very, very skinny willowy girl in a tutu, you can say, this is grace, this is beauty. And it's actually not the same thing. It's you know, it's a tricky one for a lot of people, but it's not the same thing. So anyway, she, like Kamila, is very good. She's not like 30 points better than everybody else good. But, you know, I mean, you'll watch her and be like, there's nothing wrong with this. And it's like, yeah, that's correct. It's fine.
Yep. And last but not least, we have Alexandra Trusova, who is the tech girl. All of them are forced into doing the big, big, big jumps, but she is all jumps, baby. And she's kind of, I think it's kind of her brand. Like, it's, they're not trying to hide it. She is sporty. She is all muscle. Whatever is on her body is all muscle. And she does every single quad. Just so many of them all the time. She has very, 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 very long red hair. And she, when she's good, the way her programs are built mathematically, no one can catch her. The thing is, sometimes things go awry very early on in the program, and then it's just very hard to salvage.
Yep, it's just chaotic. It's like, with Sasha, the strategy is throw every possible fucking thing at the wall, and if any of it lands, it's gonna be fine. That's literally it.
Yeah, essentially, it's a big math game, and that's fine. But anyway, here's your Olympic podium. Spoilers.
There you go. Spoilers. So that being out of the way, we're gonna talk about a bunch of other skaters that are probably gonna do really well and that we really love to watch and are what we love about the sport.
Let's do Team USA.
Team USA.
Oh my God, I'm taking this one. The first person who is on Team USA in the women's is Mariah Bell, whom I adore so deeply. She's one of my favorites of all time. And she is ancient. You will see coverage of her being at the Olympics like, impossible thing happens. Doctors hate this woman. She is so fucking old and she's going to the Olympics. She's 25.
It's doctors hate
doctors
her.
Doctors hate her.
They want to know her secret.
Her secret is that she's 25.
Yep. It's just silly. It's just silly, but it's like, this is just really sadly very uncommon for a skater to continue to just slow and steady improve until they're at the ripe old age of 25.
She's the oldest American woman to go to the Olympics in like 95 years or something.
I wouldn't be surprised if she was one of the oldest women competing at the Olympics in figure skating, like singles. I don't know this for a fact, but she's definitely one of the
oldest. Yeah, she might be. Yeah.
She might be the oldest. All right. And also on our, I say our because I'm American. It's not like, that is not American.
I do stand Team USA. We know that.
I mean, yeah, we love Team USA. We're not like, I don't think we're biased towards anybody, but you know, whatever. The US style of skating is typically a little more focused on like classic lines and preserving the sort of like aesthetic of old school skating, which is just kind of more pleasant to watch. But anyway, we also have Karen Chen. I think that Karen is probably the most beautiful skater at this competition. And she is very beautiful, but I don't mean like as a, like a face, like a person. I mean, like, her skating is the most beautiful skating. I think that with maybe a couple people giving her a run for her money, like, there's not going to be a more beautiful layback spin. There's not going to be a more beautiful spiral. Like, she just goes out there.
She melts into her spirals, I weep, and you will weep. It just is those beautiful moments of just, like, soaring. And she's very, very good at what she does.
And she gives face the entire time she's serving face. It's like if we, you know, you look at the girls from Russia who look scared the whole time, if anything. And then Karen, like the second the music starts, before she even moves her body, she's giving you like a full face journey.
I love her.
Like, it's art. Yes.
Lastly, on Team USA, we have Alyssa Liu, who is a child. She is the youngest of them all. And when she was even smaller, she won nationals when she was like 14, and it was huge because back then she was already doing a triple axel and she was training quads and all of that. And it was very precious when she won nationals because she scream cried the entire time and it was precious. And then she hit puberty and things changed a little. So she hasn't been training some of her harder jumps, but she is still very, very, very good. She's just no longer like as terrifyingly unbeatable as she used to be for a little bit. And she's delightful and charming and very, very cool to follow on the internet. Something to watch out for with her is that she had a change of coaching team and location literally a month ago. So her life's been a little chaotic. And I personally, I don't know about you, Megan, but I personally question how that's gonna help or not help her with this event.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, it was all very publicly, like, she was in Italy and she really didn't want to leave Italy, but her dad was like, well, she's not doing quads anymore, so she has to go somewhere where they'll make her do quads. And like, it's like, no, she's not doing quads anymore because she's like, just not a child anymore. I think that sort of tension of like, growing up and being in that middle phase is really evident and like everything about Alyssa. Her choreography is like her short program, it's like weirdly young, like for some reason it gives like Toddlers and Tiaras pageant-y vibes. The free skate's more mature and I think hopefully she goes more in that direction in the future. It's just interesting to see what happens when a child who is capable of incredible things goes through puberty and then you let them continue to figure things out and turns out they can then be a slightly older teenager who's still really good at skating and going to the Olympics. Who would have thought?
Fascinating. So that's US. Team Japan, another team that we very much stan a lot.
We very much do. Talk to me about Kari.
I would love to. Kari Sakamoto is going to the Olympics and I'm overjoyed. She is arguably the best of them all when you don't count the Russian ladies, which we've already tackled. She is straight up one of the best just skaters. There's people who don't like her style because
she doesn't skate super feminine. Like, she can, and she has done beautiful hyper feminine programs in the past, but more recently she's been skewing towards things that are like, what are different aspects of femininity? I could be an action star, I could be a heroine, or a fighter, a warrior. I could show different sides of femininity. And she works with Benoit Richaud, who's a choreographer who kind of specializes in that. So a lot of people are like aesthetically not into her programs and thus like being kind of dicks about it. But I personally really like.
I adore her so deeply. And also we should mention she doesn't have a triple axel or any quads. She is one of those skaters who just skates with such absolute quality that you don't need the bells and whistles. And she's been on such a fantastic upward trajectory, and she's peaking at just the right time, and I'm thrilled to watch her at the Olympics.
Absolutely. And we also have Waka Bulaguchi, who is another favorite, personal favorite. She, when I was talking about Karen Chen, I was like, she might be the most beautiful. I was kind of thinking in the back of my head, like, Wakaba could give her a run for her money. Wakaba is one of those stories who, like, she did really, really well 4 years ago. She didn't make it to the Olympics. She did really well at Worlds right after the Olympics. And then she's dealt with injuries and tons of hardships and not doing as well as she wanted to. And we all knew she was great, but she wasn't getting those results for years. But she's always been really expressive. And like, it's like you're watching a dancer perform. Like, it's moving. Like, the way that she does everything with, you know, face, body, artistry, it's incredible. And she has a triple axel. So it's not just artistry, it's also technical firepower. It's just a matter of her being in the right mental zone to land it. Her free skate is the Lion King, and it is breathtaking.
It truly is. She wears a crown for it. It's amazing. And lastly, but not least, obviously, we have Mana Kawabe, who is a child. She's, I feel like every team has like the child. Mana is like the new rising star of Team Japan. She does have a triple axel as well, and when it works, it's terrifyingly good. Do you want to talk to me about her music?
Yeah, and I also quickly want to say that your like observation about like most teams having a child is actually like really smart, because it's like super true, and they kind of do it on purpose, I think, because they, in general, federations like to have a skater from like the quote unquote next generation go to the Olympics, so that then next Olympics they'll have at least one person who's seasoned that could potentially go. So that's like a common pattern, if you haven't noticed already. It's usually like a couple seasoned people,
a child,
with exceptions, with notable exceptions. But her music is terrible, and it's the thing about Team Japan is that actually none of them have the best music or programs I've ever seen them have. Like, they're not bad, but like, it's just every single one of these people has had absolutely amazing programs, and then now they're going to the Olympics with not their best, which is a little disappointing. But Mana's is probably the worst. Her short program is the Max Richter version of the Vivaldi Winter, and it's just like irritating because it's just like rhythmically different in a way that is grating. And the free skate is, I swear to God, I don't even know because I blocked it out.
I don't remember either, but I just know I'm questioning it.
Oh, it's a Sarah Brightman.
Oh,
Sarah
God.
Sarah Brightman's voice gives me diarrhea.
Yep. Never mind.
Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
But those are, I think, the ones to like really, really watch from those federations. And now we are just going to give you some little shout outs of people who are going and are amazing. And you'll probably not hear like the commentators and mass media like really, really, really talk about them, because they're not the podium stories.
One skater who could be a podium story, if ever, well, she won't be, but she could be like a top six podium, like secondary people's choice podium, the popular vote, is Young Yu from Korea. She also has a triple axel, and it's not been the most consistent recently, but in the past it has been. And is her artistry the greatest? No, but it's not bad. And like, when everything works together, she has a lot of potential to be a real top scorer.
Yeah. Who else? Lona Hendricks is fantastic. She represents Belgium, and she, aside from the Russians, has emerged as like one of the best European figure skaters right now. She's absolutely fantastic. Her free skate is questionable, but the dress is probably my favorite this year, so enjoyed that. And also, she's coached by her brother, who also used to be a competitive figure skater up until like a couple of years ago, and then he retired and he started.
He was at the last Olympics. I'm pretty sure he was one of the few out gay figure skaters. Correct. At the last Olympics. Yes. If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, his name is Yorick, and he is an icon. And she has truly like popped off so hard since he started coaching her. It just works so well for them, and she's gonna be fantastic to watch.
Yeah, we also have Madeline Skeezus, who is from Canada. Canada had one of the single strongest singles skaters women's fields for many years, and then after the last Olympics, Caitlin Osmond retired, and it was kind of like, oh my god, who's going to fill in this gap? We just have, it's a real growth period for them, and Madeline Skeezus has emerged as like the new rising star. She also has a triple axel, and I think she's like working on the more artistic side of things. I don't necessarily think she's like markedly worse in that respect than a lot of other people who will do better than her, but it's just a matter of like who is determined to be the best versus like who is decided to be like maybe next time, and she just kind of falls in that yes. category of like it's not her time yet.
She also skates clockwise, which is exciting and fun, and we talked about clockwise skaters in part one, and she is one of them. Oh my gosh, Josefin Taliagard is going to the Olympics, and everyone is thrilled. Where do we even begin?
We actually talk at length about Josefin in our most recent, like, main episode, which I believe I titled One Big Estonian Fever Dream. So if you really want, like, a longer segment on Josefin,
I would check that out. She's from Sweden, and she's amazing.
She's from Sweden, and she's great. She just skates, like, quirky, weird, offbeat programs, and she's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Aveleta Kibis is from Estonia, and she always skates, like, the most high-drama, absolutely insane programs, and everything about it, from like the way that she moves and uses her face to tell the story, to like her costumes, to the music. It's always just so high drama and entertaining. It's just, she has this like bright red hair. She's just one of those skaters that like leaves an impression.
Yeah, she's awesome. And I think the last person I want to give a shout out to, and everyone who's going to be there is going to be amazing, but we can't, for a time, we can't do all of them. But watch out for Ekaterina Kurakova. She represents Poland, and she is just so joyful. Every time she skates, I'm reminded of why, despite all of the bullshit we've discussed, there is still reasons to like enjoy this sport, and she's very much one of them. She's so precious.
All right, now we're going to talk about men, and we're going to start with Team Japan, and I don't really know why. There's no real reason behind it. I just decided that
way when I wrote the outline. Well, it's the correct and good and wholesome way. Also, you're going to hear us call the men's field boys a lot, and if you're mad about it, we know. We've been told. We say it with so much love. It's a term of adoration in this house.
It is, and we've gotten permission from multiple male figure skaters that we have interviewed to say boys because they think it's cute and funny. Yes. So, like, if you're outraged on their behalf, it's misplaced.
Yeah, this is a good summary about figure skating Twitter. So anyway, Team Japan. Yuzuru Hanyu is the greatest of all time, period. No questions asked.
Period, end of
sentence. If you ask anyone, they're going to tell you that. If you ask himself, he'll probably tell you that. If you ask his competitors, they will tell you that. He is the two-time Olympic champion, could make it three. And his main reason for still being there, aside from just proving a fucking point, is that he wants to land a quad axel, which, like we said before, no one has done before.
Yeah, he threw it down in competition at Japanese Nationals and, like, sort of landed it. I believe it got like most of the way around and he didn't fall, but it was like, you know, there were deductions for the fact that it wasn't like a full true quad axel, but he wants to do a quad axel at the Olympics. And to be honest with you, I'm not a mathematician. I would have to defer to like what Jackie would have to say on this. I think that he would probably have to land it in order to win and then go clean.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I see him getting that third medal, because he is, despite being like the greatest of all time, he, for whatever reason, like, and honestly, a lot of it is just like he has a bad ankle, has sort of just had a little tiny bit of trouble mathematically keeping up tech wise. And it's kind of like, I feel weird saying that because it's not that he doesn't have the skill. It's just a matter of like the way that he's able to like mathematically puzzle together the skills that he's able to do. Just sometimes the math isn't quite there as high as some of the other guys. And that's just all it is.
But if you just want to talk about absolute sheer artistry and just unbeatable presence, I usually am not a fan of like, oh, there's never going to be anyone like him ever again, because we don't know. But he is such a figure and such a like trendsetter, and he is so important that as long as there is figure skating, I think people will be looking back to what he is doing and what he has done, because it's huge. Like, he is just on another level, and it's amazing.
Absolutely. And he's coached by Brian Orser, who is a former Olympic silver medalist and who has the Toronto Cricket and Curling Club in Canada, which is home to so many amazing skaters. And he really is like kind of the antidote to what we were talking about with Russia. He very famously like coached Evgenia Medvedeva after she left Russia and then went there. He puts so much emphasis on mental health and nutrition and making sure that skaters have everything they need to succeed, like as people. I think he himself struggled with anxiety. And so he's really, really good for skaters who are like working through mental illness. And it's like this perfect breath of fresh air antidote to this idea of like, you need to be mentally tough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's great. And his team.
Yuzu's been away from him because of COVID, but
they've been FaceTiming.
He's been with him for many years. Yeah.
And I think that covers it.
So we also have Shoma Uno, who absolutely incredible. And he has had quite the journey over the past 4 years. If there was going to be a figure skater that we were going to make a movie about,
yes,
and it would be the most entertaining, I would want to watch the Shoma Uno story. Shoma was at the last Olympics. He won silver. He is the reigning silver medalist of the Olympics. That was kind of the story of his life. He was always getting silver behind Yuzu. He's very nearly as gorgeous artistically and as dangerous technically. And the main thing with him is that he's kind of inconsistent. He's a god of chaos. And what we mean by that is like, there's people who are inconsistent because their technique isn't good and like it's just not always there for them. And then there are people who are inconsistent because the amount of sheer power and energy that they're putting into their jumps is like, sometimes a human body cannot physically land that. And it's like, no one could do that. Can you do it? I don't know. It depends. He's the latter camp. He's just chaotic. Like, he's got these big jumps, these big spins. Like, he's this tiny, tiny little dude. He's like 5'0",
he's
right?
He's
5'2". And he's small.
I have seen him in real life, and he's tiny.
Just flying. Yeah. And so if he's falling, it's because he himself just launched his little 5'2 body into the air with the amount of force that it is simply not possible to land. But then because he wasn't getting these consistent results, basically he left his lifelong coach, who he'd been with since he was like 3 and was basically like a mother to him. And he was like, I want to go out and explore. So he went and he did workshops with like every other major coach, including Atari.
That was a terrifying week in my life.
It was a terrifying week. And
Atari
then was like, I didn't find any Atari. He didn't find anybody he really clicked with. And so he said, I'm going to be coachless for a little while. And that ended up going very badly for him. Netta, you actually saw that in person.
God, yes. I witnessed his worst performance of his career at the 2019 International de France, where in his free skate, he fell on quite literally every single jump. And it was a disaster. And then he was by himself in the kiss and cry. And he was actually crying, but he wasn't crying because he was sad. He was crying because the audience just fully was like so supportive of him, because we knew he was going through it. And that was a whole chapter of his life.
That was, yeah. And that was the turning point, actually, because that was like the short program, I think. And then the free skate, his like longtime sort of like mentor slash colleague, Stefan Lambia, who is also a retired former figure skater and an absolute icon and legend in the sport. The two of them had worked together on like
also an Olympic silver medalist, two-time world
also
champion,
an Olympic silver medalist,
legend, icon, star.
Yes, one of the best. Stefan had choreographed for Shoma before. They had done some ice shows together, so they knew each other. And Stefan was like, this is unacceptable that this kid is like alone in the kiss and cry and crying. So he stepped in and was like, I'll be your coach for a while. And then that turned into like weeks, turned into months, and then it turned permanent. And Stefan runs this like, now they're going to the Olympics. Stefan runs this sort of like very like paradisey, like in the Swiss Alps, this school called Champéry. And it's like very, it's kind of like cricket club in that there's a lot of emphasis placed on like the quality of life of the skaters and them having like hobbies. And sometimes that's like, okay, but like, can they jump? But like, Shoma came in with this firepower and he just needed like a little bit of love and care and support, and he's been flourishing. So it's just, this is like the triumphant end of the movie.
Yeah. It's been such a trajectory the past 4 years, and whatever happens at the Olympics, he's just a forever favorite. People did try to make him a villain on the internet. If you see any of that, fucking ignore it. It's all bullshit. I'm not even going to tell you about it.
Yeah, he said something once that could have been interpreted as misogynistic or something, and then like whatever, it's like
it was stupid. Just ignore it.
It's one of those things where you'd have to look at it in really bad faith to have any sort of like negative reaction to it.
And lastly, on Team Japan, we have Yuma Kageyama, who is the child.
He's the child, but he's also incredible. And like every single time this kid ends up on a podium, which he always does because he's incredible, he's like, his face looks like, oh my God, how did I get here? Am I dreaming? It's like, he just looks like he's constantly confused and lost, and it's so charming.
Yeah, he's precious. His coach is his dad, or his dad is his coach. And he is a little powerhouse. And it makes me very emotional to watch him skate, because if we're going with like the idea of the child of the team and stuff, I mean, whether we like it or not, Yuzu is going to retire at some point, and Shoma is going to retire at some point. It's inevitable because time happens. And watching Yuma and watching some of the other younger Japanese skaters who weren't selected to go to the Olympics, it just like, it gives you hope. It like shows you this legacy that's already been built, and
hope and legacy, baby.
There you go.
The last thing about Yuma that's really cute is that obviously he idolizes Yuzu, because everyone does, but also he says like his skater that he really looks up to is Shoma, which is first of all adorable because he's also kind of a little guy and their movement styles are similar, so it definitely makes sense. But also it must be cute to like, I don't know, if I'm Shoma and like everyone on earth is like idolizing Yuzu, it must be nice to have somebody be like, I look up to this guy.
It's also cute for Yuma that he gets to go to the Olympics with the two of them.
Oh my God. Yeah. He just looks like he's just really, really confused and in disbelief all the time because he's with his heroes. And
fantastic. Can you fucking imagine? A dream. USA.
No, I can't.
USA. Do you want to talk to me about your boy? Your six time consecutive national champion of your country?
Yes. Yes. So Nathan Chen, he's the favorite to win, and he is most recently has been revealed to be a dinosaur whisperer, which is very cool. There was an ad that came out where he was like talking to some dinosaurs for Jurassic Park or some shit. I don't know. So, you know, he can really do anything. He goes to Yale. Like, he's just capable of a lot of things. Dinosaurs, quads. So, yeah, he probably has the highest chance of winning gold. He's almost undefeated since the last Olympics, with the exception of like one Grand Prix event this year where he came in second.
He came in second and people were like, well, this is it. His career is over.
And then he went back to winning.
Yeah.
He's coming to this Olympics with something to prove, because the last Olympics, he very famously had a very bad time and bombed and fell a bunch, and it was super uncharacteristic. It hadn't really happened before. It never happened again. It's just the worst time to...
I straight up have not rewatched his short program from the last Olympics.
It's rough.
I cannot... My body cannot take it.
He always does best when he has something to prove. Case in point, Worlds, that happened a couple weeks later after that Olympics, he went on and did like the most quads ever or some shit. Like he just, it was just so many quads.
He just kept throwing them in there just for funsies at that point. It was an iconic moment in figure skating.
It truly was. So here's the thing about Nathan. I don't think it's like that controversial to say that he is like a little bit less of an artist than Yuzu.
Yeah.
But I actually do think it's a matter of a little bit. And a lot of people will be like, he doesn't have any artistry at all, and all he does is jump, and it's not fair that Yuzu loses to him. So he has a lot of like anti-fans and people who just hate him for no reason. Truthfully, like maybe in the past his artistry wasn't as good, but like anybody else on earth, he improved. And I actually really think he has a real style now.
Oh, it's for
different.
Sure.
It's just different than Yuzu, but it's not like lesser than. It's a matter of like there are different styles of dance in the world, you know?
And I am willing to bet what little life savings I have that if you asked Yuzu or Hanyu about this, he would say the same thing.
Yuzu has actually gone on record and been like, I actually have never studied ballet and Nathan has studied ballet. Like, why are people saying this? Like, that is an actual paraphrase.
Yeah, Nathan
of an actual
used
quote
to
of
be
Yuzu.
A little ballet performer when he was a child. Yeah, so you'll see a lot of negativity, and a lot of it comes from people who deal in absolutes and only get to have one favorite and only get to root for one person. And that's a boring and constrictive way to live your life, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, like it's super valid if you look at him and you don't get excited when he skates and it's just not your style. That's super valid. And that's true of a lot of people. And like, that's fine. But like, it doesn't mean that XYZ horrible extreme thing is true. One final thing about Nathan is that his nickname among his haters online is Natty Ice, which is so funny. And I'm so angry that it's like pejorative because it's so fucking clever and funny. Do you guys have Natty Ice in Europe?
First of all, no, we don't. And secondly, I take such good care of my pristine mental health that I have so many people blocked and muted that I literally had not seen that.
I don't know how you do it because I try and the algorithm hates me. But no, so I don't know if, so this is maybe just a very American thing, but like the brand of the cheapest off-brand beer that you get at frat parties is called Natural Ice, and it is abbreviated to Natty Ice colloquially. And because Nathan is kind of a bro-y masculine character and he goes to Yale, there's sort of that like fratty stereotype about him, even though as far as I know, he's not in Greek life at all. And so Natty Ice is on it. He's an ice skater. His name, it works. It's funny. It's so fucking clever. And I wish that it wasn't only used among people who hate him because it's the funniest fucking nickname I've ever heard. And as a former frat girl, I'm like, damn, that's a wasted opportunity. Nathan fans should have snapped that up. But what can you do?
It's fine. It's fine. We can live without it, I think. I am now going to talk to you about Jason Brown. And I'm going to keep this brief. And it's going to be hard. Jason Brown is the best artist to ever grace the ice, ever in the history of this sport. And I know I just said like 5 minutes ago that no one does it like Yuzu when it comes to like artistry. That's still true, but somehow in a different way. Jason is amazing. And the reason why I think is different, I've just clarified it in my brain, is because up until very, very, very recently, Jason didn't do quads at all. He started sort of doing them, but he exists in elite figure skating as a real competitor and a real threat and just so fucking good just on quality alone. The man can go out and do just triples and you're never once going to question why isn't he doing more, because he's just fantastic. Also, he, as of June of last year, came out. So he is one of the openly queer people who will be going to the Olympics. And he has since coming out, been a very active advocate for queer rights. And just he's spoken at length about how he was never like closeted per se in his personal life. But he's as of recently realized that his status and his voice hold a lot of power. And he's started using them, which is amazing. And I adore him. And I would kill for him. The end.
I mean, what else? Yeah, there's not really anything else to say. Like, he...
Oh, same camp as Yuzu.
So yeah, they both skate with Toronto Cricket Club. Jason works more closely with Tracy Wilson, who's one of the other head coaches there. She's kind of like the mom of the team. And the two of them are like two peas in a pod. It's very sweet. He's like a real sunshine man. He's one of those people that everyone describes as like the nicest person they've ever met. If you're watching, well, if you're listening to this, you presumably have maybe never gotten into the sport before or don't know as much as you could. Or you're someone's mom, or you're someone's like, if you show skating to somebody who really doesn't know skating at all, like a space alien or something, they're gonna see Jason and be like, well, that guy was the best, right? Yes. Like, no, pretty universally it's like you'll watch him and be like, well, he should win, right? And it's like, yeah, maybe.
It's one of those rare things where everyone is in agreement. There was a very, very, very brief moment on the internet a couple weeks ago when, before the Olympic teams were announced, there was a slight chance that he wouldn't get chosen for the team, and it was the most unified I have seen what little I do see from figure skating Twitter. Everyone was outraged at the prospect of him not going. And it was just like a vague mathematical possibility for like 2 hours of our lives. And everyone was like, are you fucking insane? He is the best thing to ever happen to the sport. What the fuck? And now he's going, so we're all very happy.
Yeah, and last but not least, but maybe...
Maybe least.
Yeah, fucking least. Fight me. Is Vincent Joe. Vincent is not our favorite skater, and like, I don't know him personally, so it's not, I don't think, a personal thing. There are some rumors about him having like right-wing politics, but they're unsubstantiated, and who the fuck knows, right? But the problem with Vincent is just purely that his artistic style just feels a little stiff, a little forced, a little try hard. It's just not our favorite. And there's no accounting for taste. Maybe you really love him. He skates his short program to Vincent. It's a little bit much.
Oh, God.
And he doesn't fall too often. He's very good technically. He does under rotate a lot.
Vincent Joe is, I'm comfortable saying, the only figure skater that I just don't like. There's people that I could watch and be like, yeah, it's not my style, but like, It's good. Good for them. I do not vibe with this man. And I think that's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. You don't have to like everybody. I'm sure he's a nice person. And if I met him in real life, I would have nothing against him probably. But yeah, just not my favorite.
I would hold him accountable for his actions if I met him in real life. And I would ask him to say trans rights. He can fix all of this if he says trans rights.
That's true. Maybe not the way he holds his hands.
Oh, but God. Or his terrible short program. Or the fact that he thinks he's God's gift to Earth at all times. Or his poetry.
He does write poetry online that, you know,
I mean, art is subjective, but my God.
Yeah, that's all we'll say about him. We don't want it to be like a Duncan fest. He does incredible things that we will never do.
Yeah,
so
yeah, he's an amazing athlete, but also a terrible poet. Team Russia.
So I kind of, in my outline, lumped the three of them together, which I feel a little bad about. But truthfully, there are like real stars and icons of men's Russian skating.
None of them are going.
For various reasons, none of them are going to the Olympics. And all three of the people going on Team Russia for the men are kind of like the child. And not exactly for the same reasons as the women, although even in the men's side, there is a lot of turnover and a lot of fickleness. Yeah. Body of work is very rarely considered, which is like why a previous European champion isn't going. And Mikhail Klyata is not going because he has COVID.
Can you imagine if we had Misha and Dima and maybe like my problematics and Alexander Samarin?
I was going to say even Samarin can come.
I'm sad about this all of a sudden. Wow.
I know. The guys going are Andrei Mozalev, Evgeny Semyenko, and Mark Kondratyuk. And they're all really, really good. And I really like watching them skate. But I just feel like I don't know them yet because I haven't spent years watching them because they're
It's kind of shitty to say, but it kind of feels like none of them have like earned this Olympic cycle. Like all of them are great. And I would have, this would have been like my prediction for the next Olympic team.
Yeah. I mean, I think that truthfully, the question of earning is like partially a question of like, we've been saying this the past few episodes, honestly, that like, it's kind of alarming how little body of work factors into Olympic selection and how much it's literally, how have you been doing the past couple of weeks when we need to decide?
Yeah, it's literally like the week when they pick the team.
Seriously, like the weekend when they pick the team, how did you do? And nobody does that more than Russia. Yeah. Russia waits until the last possible second to pick, and they will swap you out if somebody did better than you. It's pretty ruthless.
Yeah, but I wish them all the best, and because they're going, we're gonna get some real chaotic programs. Several of their music selections are wild, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I have nothing bad to say about any of them individually. I genuinely think they're all really good, and I like watching them skate.
Same. Last but absolutely not least in our like team overviews, we have Team Canada. Keegan Messing is a gift to this sport. He is just so deeply special. He is originally from Alaska, so he's dual citizen of the US and Canada, but he skates for Canada. He is one of those people, like you explained with Shoma, that he just skates with such power and force that when it works, it's terrifying. And when it falls apart, it's chaotic and terrifying.
Yeah, he's got one of the most compelling personal stories in skating as well. Like, likewise, Shoma, they do have a lot of parallels in that way. Over the past 4 years, Keegan has gotten married, lost his brother in a tragic accident, had a baby. He's a guy who skates only to music that is personal to him, and he plays out sort of his own personal narratives on ice. He's like very no frills.
He shows pictures of his baby at the Kiss and Cry.
He does. And his short program for 2 years, which he's not bringing to the Olympics, but which he had for a long time, is the song that he did his first dance with his wife to at their wedding. And he did a whole short program out of it, and it was so moving, and he was like always crying during it. And like, it was Ed Sheeran, which like I don't find particularly musically moving or compelling, but like, my God, did I cry.
Oh my God, I tear up thinking about this program. He's just such a character and such a, like, he seems like he's a good dude.
He's so consistently been a staple of, like, top-tier skating for so long, and yet, like, he just won his first national championship. That's how chaotic this man is.
Current training Canadian national champion. Can you believe?
Can you believe? And the other Canadian man going to the Olympics is Roman Sadovsky, who is the former Canadian national champion.
Oh, God.
He's sort of the child, but, like, I think of him as the child, but he's not. He's the same age as Nathan Chen. Like, I don't know why I think of him as a kid, but he's just really beautiful and expressive and princely and, like,
so graceful.
Spins beautifully. He's like a ballerina. Like, everything about his skating is so sensitive, and, like, that's kind of the only way I could say it. He also has a YouTube channel.
I was gonna say he happens to be a figure skater, but he's actually a YouTuber.
That's true. First and foremost, his name is Romsky, yes. Romsky on YouTube. And actually, if you're, like, new to figure skating and you want to see, like, who the skaters are and what their daily lives are like, Like, he is actually a fantastic resource if you watch his vlogs. Like, it just gives a lot of insight into, like, how do skaters practice and what do they do at the competitions and et cetera, et cetera. He's great.
And, yeah, he's just a delightful personality. He also recently discovered that baby pink is a fantastic color, and it's a fantastic journey for him, honestly. He has a baby pink costume, and it's amazing.
Yeah. We're just going to talk about some more skaters now.
Yes. First and foremost, from Korea, we have Junghwan Cha, who is a former child actor, legend, icon, and star. He is very consistently dedicated to his brand, which is pretending to have clock arm hand movements. And he is quite literally a K-pop prince, but on ice.
Yeah, he's very much like that idol kind of figure, but he's just so cute. He skates with Brian Orser as well, along with like Yuzu and Jason. And yeah, he's great. He just won 4 continents. And so I think he's coming into the Olympics as the most recent male gold medalist.
Yes, correct.
Out of any of them, which is pretty cool. We want to talk about Kevin Amoz from France, who used to be such an unproblematic fave and now is kind of a problematic fave. And I'm going to try and explain this in like the most fast forwardy kind of way possible. Okay, so Kevin is another little guy. He's like a short king, and he skates with a very unique style that's very acrobatic and energetic and up-tempo and fun. And he burst onto the scene like 4 years ago and almost immediately kind of changed men's skating. You see people emulating his elements and his style more and more. Like, you can just, it's very rare that you see somebody make such a huge impact and still be like in the sport.
Yes.
So he's fantastic. A couple reasons why things have been a little more complicated recently. One is that he's been going through an injury, and France has kind of made him compete anyway. So we've been seeing him go out and skate and be really like in a lot of pain recently, which is not fun to watch. And he's a very expressive guy. He cries every time, whether it's happiness or sadness. So you know it when he's in pain. And the big reason why it's kind of awkward is because his coaches are monsters. Basically, there was a scandal where a skater at that school, not Kevin, but somebody else, a skater at that camp, was straight up sending dick pics to a like 12 or 13 year old girl. And it was like an ongoing harassment scenario that we found out later was covered up by those coaches, who then like really shamed and pressured that girl into like, they blamed her. They told her she shouldn't say anything because she would ruin the man's career, because heaven forbid, you know? And so it kind of became that thing where all the skaters who skate in that school are then sort of implicit and complicit because they kind of knew and didn't say anything. But the question is then, you know, how much pressure were they under? I could see it going both ways. And I really truly don't know whether they are like victims of a situation where they are really forced to just do whatever and say whatever, because otherwise they don't get to skate or be in this country, or whether it truly is people with bad opinions and who covered up for monsters. Like, I truly don't know, but, and we never will know maybe, but as purely as a skater, he's delightful, and we wish him the best in terms of like his health, I guess. Because when you get to see him when he's on, it's amazing.
He's also one of the other out queer men who will be competing at this event, and that's very big and very special as well.
Absolutely.
The other French boy who's going to be there is Adam Xiao Himfa, who up until a couple of years ago, I wouldn't have like pegged as the future of French figure skating, but he's really fucking shown up, and his programs are amazing. They're the Frenchest program to ever French, and I'm fucking thrilled that he gets to go.
He does Daft Punk, and it might be his combo of Daft Punk and Star Wars remix techno might be my favorite pair of programs in like a fun way, not in terms of like a tear jerking this is monumental way, but in a like I pop off and dance and watch along.
He's fantastic. He
definitely
has such
one of my
good energy.
Speaking of good energy, we also want to shout out Dennis Vasilyevs, who is, so we talked about Stefan Lambiel and his Magical Mountain Skating School a little earlier. Dennis is from Latvia, and he's sort of Stefan's original protege. He's been kind of his first main, I don't know if officially first, but like his foremost primary student since the get-go for like a decade or so. And he's in a lot of ways like kind of the heir to Stefan's throne, in that like they just have a lot of really similar qualities to their skating. They're both really expressive, and they're both really, I don't know, there's just something intangible about it. And Stefan always emphasizes sort of like generosity to the audience and playing to the audience and giving the audience everything you have. And Dennis really does that. Like, he just goes out there and he performs and he leaves everything on the ice. So he's another one who doesn't have a quad, or didn't have a quad until recently at Euros, and he got on the podium because he threw down his quad and is flawless in every other way. So, you know, look out for him if you want to be entertained and see some really gorgeous skating.
Also, look out for him if you want to watch the precarious, terrifying reality of, is this man's ponytail going to stay up?
Correct. Okay, so the main man from China is Boyang Jin, who was kind of a star at the last Olympics. Yeah. And I believe he was the first man to land a quad lutz
ever.
Somewhere in some context. Ever. Ever.
He's so man.
First man to land a quad. He's so man. That's an inside joke we'll explain another day. But people kind of forget that he's like the quad lutz originator. And his quad lutz is perfect when it lands. But he had a hard time after the Olympics kind of keeping that momentum going. And he was sort of like in and out of the skating world scene for a while. And now he's back. And he posted on Instagram the other day a picture of him like holding his arm out to an ice rink. And he was like, the welcoming committee, like, welcome to China. It was just really funny. He's like, he's a very sweet guy. And I really hope that he being at home is good for him and we can really see him shine because he's capable of amazing stuff.
It's always so fun and amazing when a skater gets to skate for a home audience regardless of how big the event is, and the fact that he gets to have that at the Olympics is going to be incredible regardless of what happens with his skating. All right, speaking of problematic faves, problematic boys, just problematic people, we have my Georgian boyfriend Morrissey Kvitelashvili, who I call him my Georgian boyfriend because we DM'd once 3 years ago and I've just decided he's boyfriend. He also trains at Sambo 70, which we've already detailed is garbage in every way possible. He's weirdly like their one man. He is an adult man in his 20s and quite literally the only boy they train at such like elite level. But it's kind of worked for him. He doesn't represent Russia. He represents Georgia. He is one of the first or the first Georgian figure skater to really make it this far internationally. So that's amazing for him. But the way it's earned is questionable. And unfortunately, even though he's my boyfriend, we don't talk about him anymore because he falls under the umbrella of our little boycott.
He is maybe the single most inconsistent skater in the men's field in terms of like he could win the event or he could come dead last. And both are like...
Yes.
Totally on the table at any event. It's fucking insane.
Yeah. He also has a gala skate to Aladdin music and he paints himself blue to be the genie. And people seem to eat it up every time.
Yeah, well, people love body paint, I guess. I don't know. Next, we want to talk about the sort of elder statesmen of the event.
Some very, very elderly men who were allowed.
Some very elderly
in
men.
For some reason.
They're sort of like affectionately called uncles.
I hate that.
Figure skating, which I hate it too because I'm like the same age as them.
Also, why would you call them uncles when daddy is right there?
Daddy is right there. Alexey Vachinko and Mikhail Brzina of Israel and the Czech Republic, respectively, are sort of the elder statesmen of this. They've been to several Olympics before, and they're absolutely incredible, and they're amazing examples of
longevity.
What taking it slow and steady and longevity can do for you. And I think Alexey Vachinko is the only singles skater in this game that's older than me.
Amazing.
I think. Mick Brzina is 2 weeks younger than me, exactly.
Amazing. Alexey Vachinko has a lot of tattoos and is really cool. And Mick Brzina, I literally cannot talk about in a God-honoring way. And I make this joke every time because it's true. He's also kind of in the same boat as Keegan in that he has, as recently, built a very lovely family. He has a wife and a beautiful, beautiful daughter. And they're very much on Instagram all the time. And he used to be just daddy and now he's also dad. And it's precious.
Yeah. So we want to pivot over to Italy. Daniel Grassl is a strange bendy boy.
True.
He makes weird shapes with his body and he's incredible. And it's like you watch him, you're like, this is awkward, but in an interesting way.
It's very much contemporary ballet. Like, whoa, weird.
It's very much contemporary ballet. Yeah, that's his style. He's like this little like cherubic blonde boy who goes out and like bends his legs backwards. And you're like, this is new.
Yes. And the other Italian man is Matteo Rizzo, who is one of those European boys that like emerged a couple of years ago and people were like, holy shit. And then he had like a bit of an up and down situation, and now he is bringing Måneskin to the Olympics, so he deserves every right. He's so aggressively Italian.
They're so aggressively Italian, and they both are two of the few guys in the world who can or have done quad loops. It's becoming a little more common now, but they were like two of the first people. So that's crazy. And then we wanted to finish with really, really, really awesome, special, iconic person, and that is Donovan Carrillo of Mexico.
Yes. Truly the most iconic of them all. And truly a testament to like stories that are not about the podium.
Yeah. I mean, like if you're kind of sitting here like Mexico figure skating,
exactly.
What? It's like, yeah. Exactly. Like, he has to skate. He's had to skate at a mall because, like, it's not like there's a ton of figure skating rinks around. It's what we call a small federation, where there's just not a lot of, like, rich history there. And it often takes a trailblazer like Donovan to push through and, like, really encourage kids to be like, oh, I can do that. That kid's from Mexico, too. You know, he's just a showman. He's just a crowd favorite every time.
Yes.
Because he is a showman. And I don't even know if I can describe it. Like, you just have to watch him and you're like, oh, yeah, this kid is a star and he was born to perform.
Exactly. So watch out for him. And what for the rest of the people that we didn't mention, because this episode would have been 4 hours long. Honestly, the conclusion here is that all of them made it to the Olympics and all of them are going to be fantastic to watch for different reasons. Does that help?
There you go. So in summation, like, if you watch the Olympics with commentary, the commentary you'll get is kind of, it's extremely biased, actually. It's like very, it's weirdly biased. It's like more biased than what we're saying, and we're actually not being paid by anybody. So like, maybe that's why, or maybe that's not why, I'm not sure. But it can be really helpful if you want to know, like, oh, that was a quad lutz or whatever. But sometimes they talk too much and sometimes they just talk out of their asses and say things that aren't true or that are very subjective. And it's just, it's worth taking with a grain of salt that, you know, now that you've listened to this, you have kind of more of the story.
You have the right story. We're the only people with correct opinions, actually. No, I kid, of
course. You heard it here first.
I kid, of course. Other commentary, I don't know who's commentating for the ISU figure skating YouTube channel, which is going to be live streaming. Most of the commentators don't really care about the personal stories, and you'll hear a lot of commentary mm-hmm. that's just all about who's going to make the podium or not. I encourage you to have fun with that, and I encourage you to remember that there is more to that than just the three people who walk away with medals.
Absolutely. A final sort of like life hack for you is, if you're not sure where to watch the Olympics, if you're in America or any other country where some broadcasting station has proprietary rights to the Olympics, you can download the Opera browser and that has a VPN in it. And I'm not gonna like get arrested for telling you what to do, but like, I just, unrelated to anything I just said,
the Opera browser is great. Yeah.
The Opera browser is really cool. It's free to download and it has a VPN in it. And a VPN tricks your computer into thinking that you're in a different country. And I think that's really cool. And that's like that's just like a fun tidbit that has nothing to do with skating, of course, at all.
Yeah. When you do download the Opera browser, you can go to soyouwannawatchfs.com. And find some links to test during your browser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, just for example, you could go to that website and see.
And after that, for example, you could also go to our Patreon.
You certainly could. It's accessible from every country and we take every currency. Yes, we do. It is patreon.com/iced tea pod and it is how we pay for everything.
Yes, it truly helps us keep the lights on and tell people stories. And Megan has a list of people who already help us and you can join their fantastic, incredible ranks. They're as important as every single figure skater we've mentioned today.
Their names are Jimmy, Natalie, Robert, Kate, Skating Scores, Vox Machina, Adela, Greta, Tryhard Radio, Samantha, Jesse, Kieran, Mary, Yana, Barbara, Another Barbara, Sunny, Erin, Aura, Sally, Samira, Joseph, KM, and Spirit, I'm always throwing plushies at Evgenia Medvedeva, Jennifer, Heath, Jules, Danny, and Jordan.
Thank you so much, and thank you for listening. You're probably new here, and we're so incredibly thrilled to have you. Welcome on fucking board. You're about to have a great time. It's going to be so much fun.
If you aren't new and you listen to this just because you like us, hey, that's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
This was probably boring for you, but I hope you had a good time anyway. Next time we talk to you, it's going to be the fucking Olympics, y'all.
Yeah. Megan, where can people find you to follow your journey to the Olympics?
Oh, my God. If you want to follow my travel journey, you can follow me on Twitter at MeganKelleher3. What about you, Netta?
I'm at Netta Marie. It's NEDA and then just Marie. And I fucking love flying. I will cry the second I'm at the airport and I will tweet about it. And then you can follow both of us for finally in-person shenanigans at IcedPod on Twitter and Instagram. And we will see you at the fucking Olympics, yo.
Yay!
Bye.